You are listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. It's the Community Character Hour, and we start things off with a little fun fact from the calendar created by Mr. Will Valentine. Hannah, what was going on some 100 years ago?
Yeah, on July 30th of 1915, the newspaper read, "If the recent cold weather has not chilled the water in the lake too much, local swimming fans will have the opportunity of seeing a long-distance swimming match between Dan Nolan and Kenneth Murray Sunday afternoon. The race will start at Sunnyside and wind up at the city dock, a distance of about 7 miles. Both men have been training for the past 2 weeks as they figure on a hard-fought contest. Last year, Nolan beat Murray when they swam from above Whitaker's Point to the city dock, a distance of about 2.5 miles. Nolan's time for that race was 55 minutes, and Murray's 1 hour even."
My goodness. This is, they're going from Sunnyside all the way to city dock.
Yeah.
We talked about last month, but basically right, you know, right to City Beach.
That is
a haul.
And it's open water, too, if you go straight across.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I
don't think I'd enjoy that swim very much.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. Well, how did it go? Did they actually do the swim?
Or? Well, one of them did. For unexplained reasons, Nolan apparently scooted off to Canada before the race took place.
Wow. That is really,
yeah, we don't know
it's
if
one
he was,
thing not to show, but
yeah.
Just leave the country.
Was he going on vacation? Was he running from the law? We will never know.
Okay.
But that did not deter Murray. 11 days later, the paper reported, "Kenneth Murray swam from Sunnyside to City Dock in 5 hours and 40 minutes. He kept well to shore most of the way to be in warmer water, and the distance he covered is estimated at 10 miles. His body was as cold as ice when he pulled himself out at the dock, but he said he felt fine. A launch accompanied him."
Okay, so he had a boat with him, and he kept towards shore, which I guess is probably what I do, but it's so much longer, though.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It added 3 miles to it, but I guess you aren't dealing with the potential chop.
Okay.
Yeah.
His body was cold as ice.
Yeah.
But he said he felt fine.
So maybe that'll be the next iteration of the Long Bridge swim.
Yeah, maybe. to this day you find there's plenty of real kind of, what do you call it? Not just long distance, but extreme long distance swimmers in Sandpoint. There's a team that swam the whole circumference of the lake.
Wow. Wasn't there a woman maybe 10 years ago who swam the distance, the length of it?
Yeah. Soloed it. And I think she was I don't think she was from around here. I think she did. She came.
Oh, okay.
She was a known kind of a long distance swimmer.
We've done
some of the famous big ones.
Amazing. You know. Yeah.
Channel and stuff.
I'm so surprised. Well, not really. I mean, by how cold they say the water is just at the beginning of August.
In July.
When
you'd
think it would be the warmest of the year. But
yes.
I guess it can get pretty chilly when you're out over deep water.
Yeah. Some parts of the lake seem like they never really warm up.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Sunnyside would be a good place to start. You'd be getting into the nice warm water there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then cooling off as the swim progresses. You're listening to the Community Character Hour. This is our show for August and September. And my name is Jack Peterson. I'm here with Hannah Combs, the Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning.
And Heather Upton, who is the... hold on, your title changed. Hold on.
It's
you
a
are
mouthful.
Okay, you're a planner now. You are.
Yeah, I think it's a little easier because I'm not wearing my badge anymore as an officer, right?
That's right. Yeah, you took off the hat. And,
off the horse.
Yes. All right, you're the Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Sandpoint, Idaho, USA. and we are talking, we talk once a month about interesting historical aspects of this place where we live. And today our focus is going to be on City Beach as summer winds down. A perfect topic of conversation. So there we go. Let's I guess take it all the way back as far back as it can go. How does the place that we know City Beach as today, how far back does our knowledge of the history of it go? Where does it kind of start?
Well, the area that is City Beach today was so significant before it was a beach, actually. There are so many layers to its history. Even within the past 150 years, it was a Salish and Kalispell summer encampment, key site for the Northern Pacific Railroad, and adjacent to Sandpoint's original town site.
Yeah. The summer encampment that's obviously significant, and that predates even the arrival of the railroads, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Did it always look the way it did, that it does now? Like, was it always there? Was there always like a sandy a beach, for lack of a better word or a different word?
So yes and no.
Okay.
The white sand is natural.
Yeah.
But it hasn't always looked exactly the way it does today.
Mm-hmm.
So the earliest account I've read about the beach was written by a Civil War general who was traveling to Fort Missoula by steamboat. He mentions the crystal clear water, the white sand, and tall evergreen trees crowning the point of what we know as the beach.
Cool.
Early survey maps show the sand point stretching far out and curving into the Ponderay River. So instead of this nice rounded beach that we have today, it would have been a more natural shape, depending on whether the water was high or low, with kind of a sand spit kind of going out further into the river.
Yeah.
Kind of like how the land comes out under the Long Bridge.
Yes.
Today. Yeah. The earliest photos we have of that area are from 1887, and they don't show the beach exactly, but they do show scattered trees around Sand Creek and the nearby shores of the Ponderay River. And the Northern Pacific Railroad trestle dominates the background of these pictures, which had just been built 5 years earlier. We do have one photo of a girl named Claire Gorsline and her grandmother, who are sitting on a log at the beach area in 1899. Hmm. And in that photo, it shows kind of this broad swath of grassy flat land that's buffered by a high sand dune topped with trees at the water's edge.
Huh. That's interesting. Not exactly what it is today. I mean, but still had the trees that are the trees that are there now. Have they been there since? I mean, basically, are they historical? I mean, how long do they live?
So those trees that are at the beach now are not quite that old, but we will learn more about those trees later on.
I was cutting ahead. I'm sorry.
No worries. So at that point, yeah, it seems like there were kind of scattered trees on the beach, similar to how it is today, but different trees.
Okay.
And at that point, too, people didn't use the beach in the same way that we do today. So back in the 1880s, the Northern Pacific Railroad was granted all of the land that is now City Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, that was in 1864. And so they had that land for about 20 years before they built the railroad in 1882. And for the next 40 years or so, it was simultaneously used for their industrial purposes and by residents who kind of poached the white sands bathing beaches for recreation. So a little bit used as a beach, but mostly it was a pretty industrial area during those decades.
Yeah. We talked before on a previous show about the use of sand in railroads, but it was an important, yeah, it was a just having a big pile of sand that the railroads could dig into was mm-hmm. valuable at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's the... So from 1864 through the 1880s, it was railroad property. Mm-hmm. And then what happened?
Well, the city had a grand vision for the beach area since actually 1910, and it had been consistently evolving. Early plans included a automobile parking and promenades, as well as a formal garden cafe that was jutting out on one of the piers, which I think would have been very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The bathhouse, later, as we know it actually today, is a snack shack, has been the centerpiece of the beach for most of its history, and we'll get into that a little bit later. And then in 1922, the city made a deal with the railroad to gain ownership. So this is like a huge pivotal moment, and we talked about that back in the tourist parks episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from that point, from 1922 until 1930, the property pretty much lay dormant with little or no improvements while the city was trying to figure out what to do with it. And those discussions lasted until 1932 when they were starting to get more and more serious about how to make the city beach area more usable. But there still wasn't a lot of actual activity happening.
Okay. Until 1922. Yes. When and how did the activity start at City Beach?
Well, this whole show is about community characters, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's one really pivotal figure in our community history, Vernon Shook. And he didn't mm-hmm. let anything stand in his way of his ambitions. He was a formidable character in terms of making sure he executed his vision. He graduated from Sandpoint High School. This was during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually determined to become an engineer or a doctor. He took on dozens of jobs to raise college funds. One of the jobs actually was mm-hmm. a short stint as a lifeguard at the Natatorium. That's an indoor pool in Wenatchee, Washington. And then the next summer in 1932, he came back to his childhood swimming hole and had a vision that he would change Sandpoint forever.
Yeah.
And then up until that time, locals waited in the shallows around City Beach after the spring floods and the driftwood had cleared out. They danced around the submerged logs that had escaped during log drives. It was pretty precarious. Drownings, yeah. They occurred at the south end of the sandy area where the river started because of the swift current. So it was a very dangerous place to be. The most notable was the young daughter of a local chief. And some say that that was the beginning of the end of the annual summer Salish gatherings.
Yeah. So all through this time, the Salish are still using it as a summer encampment, are still coming to gather into the 1930s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. Okay, but yes, but this is a very industrial, this is a totally different area than we kind of know it today, even though geographically it's similar. The use of it is industrial.
Yeah.
Of course, you've got logs. Yes, logs coming through. There's no protection like there is now. There's no enclosed swimming area. So yeah, flotsam and jetsam washing up on the beach all the time.
Have fun, but truly at your own risk.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's quite a few tales of that, as mentioned earlier. And Vernon's vision for City Beach included a safe swimming area, lifeguard training, swimming lessons for children, and a picnic area for all the residents to enjoy. So he really had this grand vision for how to transform those mm-hmm. white sand beaches into more of a community space. His plans also included a 12-foot-high tower so the lifeguards could see the swimmers mm-hmm. and take a periodical high dive into the deep waters.
Excuse me. Yes, the lifeguards, of course. So that after one, he had one summer as a lifeguard in Wenatchee, and he came back with this great idea that Sandpoint City Beach could become, or yeah, the area could become a public beach and swimming area. A safe
one. Yeah. And in the city's ongoing quest to attract tourists, they jumped on Vernon's proposal. They thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. The whole community loved it. It helped that he was willing to do all the work and be paid barely anything too.
Yeah.
So Vernon cobbled together monetary donations and marshaled a volunteer labor to create the first city bathing beach. The town supported his efforts, and the local lumber companies provided building materials at a really favorable price. So the whole community came together for his vision physically, too, yeah. not just in favorable support. So that was really exciting.
The Shook name persists in town, I would say. Is Vernon related to the Shooks who still live here?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's really exciting. Yeah. I remember, so Caitlin Shook is on the Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission. And I immediately texted her trying to make that connection. And she's like, yes, that's my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I about fell out of my seat because I'm such a fan. And then, of course, her father is known for... He's made such an indelible mark in our community, teaching everyone that I've met that grew up here and also making sure that bicycles are on the road.
So. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I think I bought the bicycle that I currently ride from Dan Shook. Well, that's cool. Okay. So that's a little tie into, I would guess many of our listeners know who these people are, Vernon's descendants anyway. That's cool. All right. So he's not just a kind of a character out of history, but still, still very much
very
a part
connected.
Of town. Okay. So Vernon Shook has this big idea. We're going to go and build a beach, and the city leaders, I guess city council or whatever, the city government kind of goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And says, yes, take it. Go right ahead, Vernon. Do what you want.
Yeah, and and it worked. If you remember all of the attempts they made with the tourist park a couple of episodes ago, and how it was, trial and error, this really worked on the first try.
Yeah.
It was happening at the same time when automobiles were becoming a bigger and bigger way for people to get around.
Mm-hmm.
And after motorists learned of the new amenities, Sandpoint became known as having a public park with the best bathing beach in the inland Northwest, complete with a fine bathhouse. Not too long after, in 1939, a major renovation took place thanks to financial assistance and labor through the Works Progress Administration. The entire beach area was dredged to fend off the impact of flooding.
Hmm. Okay. All sand? Or what is the...
So this is one of my nerdy questions I had to get to the bottom of. Was the entire city beach area completely sand, or was it, dirt with kind of sand around the edges as we know it today?
Right.
So a paper from 1955 states that there was clay undersoil near the bathhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem that, it wasn't just a huge area of sand. It was, there was real dirt under there as well.
Okay.
Around the same time in the late 1930s, they diverted Sand Creek to run straight south between the old powerhouse and what is now the Highway 95 bypass.
Mm-hmm.
Submerged lot. So it's kind of hard to picture this because of how the bypass is today, but they would have kind of taken that curve out of it and run it directly, due south.
Yeah.
Submerged logs were removed. Sand was bulldozed onto the beach to raise the land height. And houseboats were removed and demolished, as we've talked about in past episodes.
Those houseboats always getting in the way. Yeah. Of progress. Okay. So they built the land, but this is opposite of the beach, right? Or is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is kind of in the Sand Creek area, just trying to reinforce those shores.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
The WPA also provided funds to improve Shook's bathhouse.
Okay.
So in addition to the bathhouse, a formal garden and arboretum, that was designed, as well as the broad promenade. So they actually, it was amazing the impact that the WPA had on and making mm-hmm. the improvements and supporting the project.
Yeah. A broad promenade, which, I mean, I guess, is that what we're talking? Is that the still existent mm-hmm. walking path there? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There is no formal garden in arboretum that I'm aware of at City Beach. Was there? Was there once?
Well, I mean, here and there, it exists.
Yeah. Okay.
It would be fun, though. I love the idea of going back to those original mm-hmm. plans or finding the pictures and seeing how we can mm-hmm. can do some revival. I think just as times change and, you know, the landscaping does as well,
yeah.
according to traffic and people and so forth. But I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with the WPA, but it was the Works Progress Administration. It was this incredible program done, you know, in the 40s. And it was the idea to be able to transfer craftsmanship skills to local rural communities mm-hmm. and also provide jobs as well. And they did a lot throughout the nation, including so the mark that was made here was the bathhouse. But then mm-hmm. they also supported the construction of Community Hall, too.
Oh, cool.
So from a historical standpoint, yeah. it really enriches both of those buildings.
Yeah. This is, the WPA, kind of one of the alphabet programs of the New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
It touches everywhere in the country, including little old Sandpoint, Idaho.
Yes.
Cool.
So in further, this was kind of the era of just reshaping the land before they really put anything on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
In late 1938, the city approved a $17,000 bond issue for the purpose of buying machinery and equipment to improve the beach area.
Mm-hmm.
However, the city spent the majority of the funds on extending the city dock out another 1,000 feet. So they had other needs come up.
Yes.
So from 1938 to 1940, the Chamber of Commerce, the Civic Club, and other organizations raised funds to build a new beach house and planted grass, trees, and shrubs. So this is back to those trees we're talking about today. And the Civic Clubs are actually still participating in our park development today, which is really neat. So important
That's
mark
true.
That they've continually made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this whole story seems to be a really cool back and forth between, you know, the after the railroad donates the property, then at points in time the city gets involved, but also these civic clubs are stepping in to kind of, depending on how they each see the priorities. I think the city, you know, has kind of that long-term vision and, you know, making sure that the land is formed in a way that can be used, and then the civic clubs are really thinking about how do we get people here to enjoy it.
Absolutely.
That kind of brings us up to this other pivotal thing that happened and set the whole project back a bit.
Yeah.
In 1948, there was a massive flood. They had not seen a flood of this scale since, I think, 1894. So this was a big one, and it decimated the park and its features that had been built. And the flood accelerated the building of the Cabinet Gorge and Albany dams.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, after the flood, the Sand Creek outflow was rerouted for the safety of beachgoers, and they did more dredging.
Mm-hmm.
To improve an area that could be used as a boat marina. And that dredging also provided some of the fill that they needed to raise the land higher on City Beach. Because in the photos from the 1948 flood, you see the beach house, which is now the snack shack.
Yeah.
And it is almost up to the gutters underwater.
Yeah.
The water was so high.
It's yes. I think I've seen that photo or that. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's stunning. Some of the, that flood was wild.
Yeah. So they really, it was a big setback. But to come out of that disaster, the Corps of Engineers awarded a $178,000 contract to a Spokane company. And the contract called for this company to raise the ground level by 8 feet. They used a combination of sawdust and fill dirt. About 10,000 yards of the fill dirt was taken from an ongoing streets repair project. Okay. So it was reallocated from that. Uh-huh. They were also hired to landscape and repair the beach house. And to do this, they did what they called a stretching operation, where they basically lifted the beach house up on stilts so they could pour a higher foundation for it.
Okay.
So the foundation for the snack shack has got to be what, 16 feet deep?
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you look at the snack shack because there's such a transition of materials too. And I was analyzing that when it went from stucco to wood, and everybody kind of walks by it and they focus in on the ice cream the little goodies inside. But that little piece is a historical treasure.
Can you still see any parts of it that would have been original when the WPA built it? Or do you think it's all been kind of covered up by now?
That's a great question. And we're actually looking at doing a little mini refresh on it, too. So I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
I haven't spent a lot of intimate time. it's a really interesting structure. So after Shook's impassionate efforts to create the first public area, we can credit a lot of the people of Sandpoint for providing much of the volunteer labor that we talked about earlier. To really see the vision of what it is today. But the Sandpoint Lions Club headed the main modern improvements. And this is such an incredible story. Hearing all the things that they've done, most notably the barbecue pavilion, that really neat witch hat, the unique kind of mid-century, we call it the witch hat pavilion, was them. And their 4th of July event centered around the beach as it still is today. So that was kind of this like really special gathering place and, truly a wonderful, what would you call it? Centered point to the beach. It's just asking to come and sit underneath me.
Yeah. So the Lions Club gets active in the early 50s, and this would have been about the time that the dams, the Cabinet and the Albany Falls Dam, were becoming operational.
Yep.
So that it's kind of interesting to think of before the lake level was controlled like that, how even over the course of the summer, the water would have been coming up and down, different levels all year long.
Yeah, and that probably attributes to some of the pause that the city was taking too.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it's that balance between wanting to activate it, but the monumental costs of making sure that it's sustainable with the flooding too, right? I imagine would have been really difficult because that's probably a not unknown, a strong what if.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, right. It could be completely unusable for huge portions of the year.
The 48 flood was really extreme, but they would have seen today the lake rises and lowers 12 feet and it would have been similar back then, if not more exaggerated.
But they did build the dams. The lake is more or less stable in size now, there's summer pool and then
controlled
and then in winter it goes down. So I guess that makes City Beach more of a little safer, at least, or more permanent at that point. Yeah.
And also I believe the dams provided power to City Beach too, which is a huge change. So,
Okay.
I think that was the pivotal point where, it could stay as the vision was set.
Yeah, that was probably when they were phasing out the powerhouse.
Yeah. Oh.
We'll have to talk about the powerhouse in the future.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful building.
It is. Yeah, that is a cool building. And it would be worth talking about. Okay, so where are we here? You're listening to the Community Character Hour, by the way. I'm just going to jump in and do that. Do the radio business.
I'm like, we're back in 1954.
A little housekeeping here. This is the Community Character Hour. I'm here with Heather Upton from the City of Sandpoint and Hannah Combs from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. And we're talking about the history of City Beach. And we're up to the 1950s when, the lake level is more or less under control and things can start to be built at City Beach or can be used in a more permanent fashion.
Yeah, you could tell I wanted to sit tight in 1950. Like, don't take me out.
Yeah.
Such a fabulous time happening.
Yes.
Everyone was getting along and working together to make this fabulous.
Yes.
So back to 1954. So we have the community. The Lions Club is leading the community in helping Vernon Shook's vision. So they had weekly meetings discussing the various projects that they could undertake that would be the greatest benefit of the community. And the top project agreed upon was a 4th of July celebration. The second top concern was for a long-term project which could be worked on during the entire year. And a suggestion was made to adopt a community park project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing that they really took on the planning efforts as a civic organization. The large area adjoining the city beach was an eyesore, and it would make for a perfect project to develop into a park.
I think, if I can cut in here, I think one reason that this type of endeavor was so successful is that this was a point in time where almost all of the people who would have had leadership positions, whether formally at the city or as other types of leaders in the community, would have also been a part of a fraternal organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, everyone from the mayor to prominent business people, they were all probably either a part of the Lions or the Elks Club or the Eagles or all of them. And so there was, I think it was, there wasn't much of a gap at all between civic organizations and other forms of leadership in the community. So
it's a really good point.
It's the same group of people kind of in charge of everything at that point in time.
And I'm trying to remember what that earlier club with the City Fathers they were a part of.
Oh, like the Odd Fellows?
Well, it was probably. So it sounds like, too, some of these organizations kind of transition into others. Because there's that thread that we keep hearing about these community groups that these individuals were a part of. It's so interesting.
Yeah, there's still the Masonic Lodge. There's there's Odd Fellows. There's all the animal
Lions
clubs,
Club.
Right? Are they?
Animal, yeah.
Yes.
Rotary is a big one.
Rotary, of
They've
course.
They've done a lot of park projects.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's really interesting. So preliminary estimates for park construction were shown to be beyond the financial capacities for the Lions Club. So it was decided that they would undertake this project on a pay-as-you-go basis with all labor to be voluntary. Amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
Every Lions Club member and their families pledged to contribute to the goal of building the Lions Park. Surplus funds raised during the 4th of July celebration were to be used as seed money to get the project started.
Okay.
So obviously they didn't have enough money, so they also came up with some creative ways to raise more money. Mayor Floyd Perks, who, again, you know, he was the mayor. He was also a Lions Club member. He wrote up what he called investment certificates in the future of Sandpoint. And these actually, in the photos, they look like little stock certificates, which is really cute. And he walked First Avenue to drum up donations. So the newspaper said he was besieged by Sandpoint businessmen who wanted to be the first to make their contributions. He collected $1,050 in checks and pledges, which they thought was a fine start toward the $7,500 goal. He took all of the businessmen to Don's drive-in for coffee and donuts after relieving them of their money.
Excellent. Don's drive-in. Where's that?
Oh, I think it was, wasn't it the one that was where Burger Doc is today?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think so. Mm-hmm. And so after he shook down all of the businessmen, the next step was to get community members to contribute. And I love this approach. So a team of 15 Lions Club members made house-to-house calls, selling memberships in the Beach Project at $1 apiece. Archie Yeager was the announcer in a car equipped with a bullhorn. So as the people went door to door asking for money, he was driving down the street yelling at them with his bullhorn from his car.
Okay. Couldn't get away from it.
There's no, no escape. Uh-huh. You've either got to lock the door or give them a dollar.
Yeah.
And so Wade Brown, chairman of the committee, said, "We had such a wonderful response from the people who were home. In fact, many people wanted to chat a bit about the beach and told us what a fine project it was and what an asset it is to the community and the surrounding area." And get this, a Buick Riviera was being awarded as a door prize at the conclusion of the fundraising drive.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So give a dollar, win a car.
Yeah.
Don't they still do that?
They do. The Lions
with like
Club,
an ATV?
They do something really? Like that.
Yeah.
They'll do,
I love that.
Right. For their, when they raise money for the 4th of July fireworks, yeah. I think, yes, you can win a.
That's so brilliant.
Usually it is. Yeah, it's like an ATV or something like that. Yeah. It's not a Buick anymore.
Well, but, door prizes. You
know, that's pretty cool, though.
I think about the newspaper, which kind of served as the gossip columns. Remember how we talked about when someone arrived in town? Mm-hmm. It was noted in what they did, what they ate. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was noted who contributed and who didn't.
You're probably right.
Yep.
Oh, and this actually solved a mystery for me because there are certain Ross Hall photos that, you know, when people are cleaning out houses, we keep receiving the same prints, which kind of makes sense because they sold prints at the Ross Hall studio. Yeah. But also during this fundraising drive, anyone who donated $3 or more received a colored aerial photograph of Sandpoint taken by Ross Hall that showed the beach. He printed a whole bunch of this one overhead photo.
Now you know.
Showing the beach. Yeah, now we know where they all came from.
Okay.
That is rich.
Cool.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Well, that's very cool. Okay. The aerial, aerial photography at the time. The Ross Hall. I think I know that picture as well, but I'm sure you know it by heart. Yeah. All right. So the fund drive is successful. And what did they, how did they change the park? I mean, what did they do with
there's a little bit more to this story because Archie Yeager was selected as project manager. And I imagine it was due to his fine skills with the bullhorn.
And he was in the, he's the guy in the car. Yeah.
Oh, so he spent over 1,000 hours individually and kept the whole project moving, seeking outside volunteers and continuing to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mock-up of the proposed park that was built by the high school class, taught by one of the Lions.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so the world, it continually gets smaller. Yeah. I think everyone was a Lions Club member, it sounds like.
Yeah, cool.
The replica was displayed to the community, and it helped tremendously in raising the additional funds. The model was turned into a float for the 4th of July parade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a photo of it. It's just like, it's, you know, like a float with this, with the beach drawn on it and the like little trees sticking up out of it to show how they envisioned the beach looking when this was all done.
Well, that's very cool. And it's what a great way to promote like city planning.
I know.
Just afloat in the, for the July parade.
Maybe you should think about
bring
doing
it back.
That.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Yes.
It's the outreach method.
Yeah.
I think
we'll
so.
We'll have the artists build it. And
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Okay. So then it was time to break ground. And the Lions Club started by seeding a grassy area that would transition from the sand up to the dirt, as we discovered.
Mm-hmm.
They borrowed a cement mixer and, using sand from the beach, built a concrete sidewalk around the park.
Okay.
It says that men, women, and children worked nights and weekends and finished the walkway from the beach house to the far southern point of the beach.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Working at night.
Yeah.
By starlight.
Uh-huh.
The next area to be developed were the parking lot and the remaining acreage. So Bob Sleep, Dan DeShawn, Lee Allen, and the Sandpoint Highway District were some of the people that donated labor and materials for those efforts. In 1954, the Lions Club started improvements on the park portion of City Beach. Volunteer Wayne Ebbett moved sand around with his bulldozer and was the guy who built the boat ramp. The same year, the Lions Club built a pumping station and installed the sprinkler system. These are the kind of things that I always forget had to have been installed at some point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. It's so hard to imagine City Beach with no grass, right?
It really is.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With just all torn up. But some of the photos, you just see multiple bulldozers out there and just dirt. There's nothing there at this point in time until they get this work done.
And again, planning. So great idea to have the vision of the grass, but how are you going to maintain it? You know, you have that maintenance plan, the getting water, you know, pumping the water, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Huge endeavor.
Yeah. The grass at City Beach is watered right from the lake.
That's a great question. I believe it is.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
I used to work for the
question.
Parks Department.
Actually. Did you really?
I did.
That's a great, great summer job.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was fun.
We're hiring right now.
Okay. I recommend it. You should, anyone who wants a fun way to spend a summer or a fun way to make a living for a summer, the Parks Department's the way to do it. But most of the other parks, I believe, are just on the city water system. The beach is not, is not plumbed into the city water
and
system.
And a few other parks that we have that are close to water, I believe we created the system to pump it in.
Mm-hmm.
So the estimate for the entire cost of all the improvements in the 50s was $120,000. But with so many donations and volunteer labor, they actually did all of the work for only $25,000.
That's so incredible.
Oh my goodness.
And one thing I remembered as we were researching this was when we talked about, was it the tourist parks and how they sent people out to dig up trees and then replant them in that area.
That's pretty amazing.
Did they do the same thing at this point in time with the trees?
Huh.
Or did they have a different approach for it?
Well, in 1956, the Lions planted 18 trees. So they raked, rolled, and seeded the areas that had been disturbed during the installation of the sprinklers. So I imagine that they would have sourced the trees locally. I mean, were there a lot of tree farms then? In 1957, the large center part of the park was seeded with grass and trees that were planted by the members. Okay, here we go. Thank you, papers. The trees were donated by the Civic Club and the Edgemere Grain. But again,
where did they come from?
Those
are not nurseries. The ladies from the Civic Club were just digging up their neighbor's trees or something. Who knows?
There were a lot of forests around here still. The five-year estimate for the project was completed in only 3 years.
That's impressive.
That really is. Concrete for the tennis and basketball courts were poured in 1963 to 64. Okay, so is this the first tennis court? Because I've been trying to figure that out.
Yes, it probably was.
It sounds like it was.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing. So Del Brown recalled that Lyon's work at the site, he worked at the site for many days, and he'd work from like 5 to 7 a.m. before going to work until the project was completed. So these are individuals that were working before work, which is so incredible. Yeah.
That sounds hard.
Huge commitment, right?
Yeah. 5 to 7 a.m. No, thank you. Goodness sakes.
Well, okay. I feel like there was like...
No, that'd be a cool way to start the day.
It would be.
Yeah, down at City Beach, catch the sunrise. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Complete conjecture, but it seems like there was really positive energy, of course, you know, wanting to, with a greater vision, you know, of the community to build this. But I also think there was a little vibe of competition, too.
I'll go out at 4 a.m.
So the 7,500 square foot Witch's Hat beach shelter was built in 1969, and it was modeled after a similar structure in Franklin Park in Spokane.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Franklin Park. I don't know if I've seen that one.
I have not there. Is it? Yeah. It still exists?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll have to do some digging.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Field trip.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's kind of a sister shelter in Spokane.
Yeah, great inspiration.
Yes.
So the Lions Club built that, of course, for the community, but also for their barbecues.
Yes.
And it has been the site of hundreds of family picnics, parties, and community events over the years, which is
most recently on Friday, the KRFY the volunteer picnic. Was held at the beach.
Oh, nice.
That's right. And that was just this on Friday the 23rd, I believe. And that was, I did not go, but those who, I was going to. And then we had that freak rainstorm, right? If you recall. And those who were there were sheltered Thank goodness for the Lions Club for putting that shelter in place.
That's brilliant.
The hardy souls who made it down to the beach for the volunteer picnic. Shout out to them too. Yes. yes.
They're as tough as the people who were building this.
Yep.
Absolutely. So the Lions continued in the beautification of the park well into the 1980s. So after the city took over the responsibilities and upkeep, the city added a locker room, concession stand, breakwater jetty, playground equipment, volleyball courts, and boat dock.
Okay. That is it was the 80s when the jetty that has the Statue of Liberty on it.
That's what the breakwater jetty was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So that's not as old as I thought.
No. Oh. That's not so old at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting. So after the work was done by Lions Club, the beach had the beach itself had a waterfront area of 2,160 feet of pure white sand. That's really impressive.
Yes.
Making it the longest beach of its kind in the Inland Empire. I mean, talk about like a sweet spot to promote for tourism, right? Mm-hmm. They've nailed it. They finally did it.
Yeah.
We're on the map, Sandpoint.
Yes. The... 2,160 feet of sand.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. We all know. I mean, those of us who know the beach know exactly how big that is. Mm-hmm. But like, what is it?
That's so
like
almost a third, half a mile.
A third and half a mile.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So, does that? Now I'm thinking back to our previous episodes. Are we now more attractive than hope is the big question.
It seems like this would put us over the top, right?
Sealed the deal.
Right.
Finally in the 60s.
Yes. Okay.
Hope has become a quieter place. Yeah. This is where the party's happening now.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Hope's like, you can have it now.
Speaking of parties, swimming is not the only thing that took place at City Beach. There have been some other odds and ends that have happened down there. So starting in the early 70s, And I have a connection to this being at the museum. Mm-hmm. The grassy lawn was home to what they called the Gay 90s Festival that the museum hosted. So this was a nostalgic term referring to the 1890s.
Yes.
The idea was that people were happier then because there was no income tax.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
So this is kind of a throwback festival that the museum hosted. A few years after that, it turned into POAC's Arts and Crafts Fair, which is still going on to this day.
Yeah.
So that was one kind of quirky event that took place at the beach. Mm-hmm. There was also, once upon a time, we talked about the sidewalk that goes all the way around the beach. There was also a road that went all the way around the beach. I think that was earlier, like in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. You can kind of see where it would be because there's the road go the existing parking lot, which seems like it should just continue through the basketball court, and then and there's that row of trees. And
so if you've ever wondered why that road does not go all the way through, which if you have been there when it's crowded and you've had to go through the little turnaround points, you've probably wondered why it doesn't go through.
Yes.
Back in the day, they used that for snowmobile and motorcycle races.
Yes.
Down at the beach. And eventually the city planted grass over part of it. My theory is that there were unauthorized car races going on down there at night.
There must have been. Absolutely. Yeah, there would be.
Teenagers just spinning laps down there.
Is it called dragging the gut?
That sounds... I can picture it.
Yeah, and apparently I hear from people that grew up here, like that's where you would meet up. Of course, this was before cell phones. But you just showed up and then you knew what was happening in that community and you would just drive, you know, your car just around and...
Oh, that sounds more like a promenade than a drag race.
But then they would do, of course, they'd spice it up, you know?
So that was a big one. And then the other curiosity I discovered in 1959, they hosted I think this was the Lions Club, hosted a David Thompson symposium at the beach. So this would have been a bunch of people gathering to kind of talk about David Thompson's explorations. But as a part of that, we have a photo of Floyd Perks, Ross Hall, Robert Cheatham, and Ed Hawkins, who facilitated the event, standing over a dead bison that was barbecued the meal for the picnic. So
I wonder how that tasted. Okay.
So in the 1900s, it was a bear.
Yeah.
In the 50s, it was a bison.
Yep.
Okay. Well, there you go. When's the last time you were at a symposium? You don't see many symposiums
anymore.
We need
to bring them back.
I think so.
I feel like a symposium's like a more serious Chautauqua. I think we should bring back the Chautauqua.
Okay.
It's a little more fun. It's like a symposium meets a circus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, all right.
Next museum event.
Yes. As we grow close to the end here, what more can you tell us?
Well, there was this great newspaper article stated by Jim Barry, and he says, "Now, just for a moment, shut your eyes and visualize a beautiful park with many tall evergreen shade trees, broad stretches of green grass, flower beds and borders, fireplaces, picnic tables, park benches, playgrounds for children, and beautiful Lake Ponderay as the background." Ooh, I'm getting goosebumps. "Such a park will be a real showplace, a place we can be proud to bring our families and friends, a place tourists will long remember." So thanks to Jim Barry, he was a charter member of the Sandpoint Lions Club for the Written History of City Beach. So he wrote up this history in hopes that the park would be formally named the Lions Park to honor the people who beautified it. And... this is an archival document that we were able to discover, the Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission. And we certainly are working with city leadership on further understanding how to recognize all of this incredible history visually in City Beach Park. So more to come. But there is one really unusual, iconic art piece out there.
You mentioned it, Jack. Yeah, I can think of the one thing. Are we talking about the Statue of Liberty?
Yes. So okay. That was actually yard art donated by Lana Turner.
Okay. And let's be clear. This is not the real... There is another Statue of Liberty. It's in New York Harbor. And I believe it's made of, like, copper.
Slightly bigger.
It's a little bigger. This is a smaller replica of the Statue of Liberty that sits at Sandpoint City Beach.
So iconic. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. So since we all got together and worked on this radio show at City Beach... I've actually been out of town, but held in the loop. So she is not there at the moment.
Correct. And it's jarred.
I know.
And you go down there and
I keep getting
the hole where it should be. Yeah.
Just amazing screenshots from Facebook. And my understanding is that I'll get more of the down low, but people were climbing on it and it became kind of a structural integrity moment with the brackets.
Mm-hmm.
But rest assured that the city is working on making sure that it is stabilized, safe, and will be erected. Number one thing, as much as, you know, it's important to have our beautification moments, safety is always number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so generally when something is taken down, it's typically due to that. And it's just a matter of figuring out best path forward for reinstating that.
Yeah. It is a little worn out too, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Could use
a new patina.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so
it's a cool feature too, that it's like, it's wired. I mean, there's the light, her torch actually lights up and is a safety beacon for nighttime boating.
It's incredible. I mean, it was such a significant Instagram moment today. I know it's interesting when something is taken away, like the extreme emotional loss that's felt in the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And it really is, it shows how powerful art can be and how important it is to the character of a community. And I just wanted to shout out to Will Valentine and Dan Evans, our amazing researchers that help support us on this show, unearthing exciting new history that may have not been heard before about things that were around on the daily.
We can't do it without them.
Yes. We're running out of time here. In summation, what have we learned here? How does it apply today?
So the beach area has continually changed with the times to accommodate the desires of the public. The city has had to overcome plenty of challenges to do so, from flooding and sand management to the geese we have today.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever wondered I've wondered this before, why the beach drops so dramatically into the water.
Mm-hmm.
That has to do with this ongoing, just having to manage the sand to keep it up at that level that's 8 feet higher now because of the flood.
Right.
It's changed a lot. It'd be pretty cool if that diving platform was still there. But again, back to safety.
Yeah.
Vernon Shook's days were a little bit more unregulated. So,
indeed.
Yes. 12-foot diving tower would be cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about, and maybe the information doesn't really exist, but the log, the barrier that, that separates the swimming area from, you know, open water boating area.
Right.
Do we know anything about when the structure of that was driven into the ground?
We didn't come across it in our research. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if it was maybe around the time when the city took over from the Lions Club, just as another one of those safety precautions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a cool and sort of unique feature of the beach too, they're huge logs rather than kind plastic of, you know, a plastic barrier or something,
and
like
not
that.
To the history too, because there were logs always floating
right
there.
Yeah,
just unleashed.
Well, okay, we do Heather, tell us about lifeguards. Is there anything you can say about the importance of having lifeguards at City Beach, or how the city is going to recruit lifeguards for next year?
I would love our superintendent, Katie Bradbury, to take that one. She's amazing. And the lifeguard issue is a labor issue that's impacting all communities.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where it's been, we're all going to, as communities together, have to put our thinking caps on to figure out how to get that, the youth, and, you know, make it the most attractive job again.
Right. Because it was such a cool thing to be back in Vernon Shook's day.
Yeah. I think it is still probably the best way of,
I think so,
the best kind of summer job you could have.
And in my understanding, and I'm certainly not an expert, I do the arts, culture, and historic preservation, so I hate to talk to it, but you can't just have one or two lifeguards.
That's the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not that nobody's applying for the job.
Yeah.
You need you have to have a team. Right.
Otherwise, it's a safety issue for those individual lifeguards. So,
right.
So it's not as simple as one may think.
Yeah.
And they all have to be certified at a certain level according to federal and state regulations. And it's just quite a comprehensive process trying to figure out how to put that team forth in conjunction with some of the labor issues that every community is experiencing. But we do have fantastic leadership putting their minds together to try to figure it out. And it hurts us at the city not being able to solve it, but it's just one of those complicated issues.
Yeah.
We need a new Vernon Shook to step up and inspire the teenagers.
Maybe a statue will help.
Yes. Vernon. Oh, there's an idea. Yeah.
That is something I could try to figure out.
I've said it before. I think I might be the man for the job. I think there's no upper bound on on the age limit of a lifeguard. I think I see myself as the David Hasselhoff type character.
You've got the hair. Team.
Yes. Kind of
I love that.
The old hand.
The community helps solve problems again.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay. Well, I'll have to go get certified again, I suppose. I haven't done anything like that in a long time, but we can do that. We're kind of out of time here. Anything we should mention about any last thoughts on City Beach? Did we forget anything before we move on to what comes up next?
I think we covered it.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's coming up for the museum? Any upcoming events you want to mention?
Yeah, we are bringing Jack Nisbet to the Heartwood Center on Sunday, September 15th. He is a renowned author and historian of this area, and he will be doing a presentation about David Thompson. So if you heard us mention him briefly and want to know more, Jack Nisbet is the authority of David Thompson's explorations in this area. And again, he'll be at the Heartwood Center on Sunday, September 15th.
Awesome. City business, anything you want to mention for the city?
Well, we are still launching our residential call for information to enrich our walking tour brochure. Okay. And you don't have to own a historic home to participate. If you know of a story about or any history on Sandpoint's residential houses, please participate in the survey. It's on sandpointidaho.gov. There's a link. It's a really easy form to fill out. And we're just really excited to enrich our history sources. All of that information goes into the museum's archives, so it's documented forever. And it will also help with research requests as well. So it's a really beautiful initiative.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Next month, are we still thinking we might talk about the Long Bridge? Maybe.
Yes. To be determined.
Could be.
All right. Possibly.
Well, catch this program on the second and fourth Monday of the month. We do it live. We are live here on the fourth Monday of the month, and we'll rebroadcast it on the second Monday of the month, if that makes sense. So of the next month. This has been the Community Character Hour for August and September 2024. Heather Upton is the Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Sandpoint. Hannah Combs is the Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio, and we'll continue with our regularly scheduled programming, starting, I believe, with Bird Note. Yes, it's Bird Note. It's Bird Note time coming up right now. Thanks for listening to the Community Character Hour.